Hello and welcome to episode 538 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan, and today we have a very, very, very special guest. This is a young man whose screen name I have known since, I guess, roughly 2015. And I know the screen name because he's undoubtedly been one of the biggest winners and most feared DFS players in the world ever since then. This is a young man I'd easily consider one of the top five players in the history of DFS, but he's done it very, very quietly and without much fanfare, of course, until now. It is Yuda Cow. Yuda, thanks for doing the show. How's it going?
No problem. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
For sure. I think off the top, you know, you've been kind of mysterious, not like a lot of people in front of the camera or talking a lot on Twitter. I think you have like three tweets lifetime or something like that. I think people are curious. And I'm curious too, I guess, why the change of direction now in terms of your public engagement? You did a Ask Me Anything in the ETR Discord last month, which was awesome. Now you're doing the show here today. I guess a lot of people are probably just wondering why or why now.
Yeah, I just like anyone, I enjoy talking sports, talking DFS. And prior to this, I think it was just natural for me to, you know, not really want to give away anything, protect my edge. But I think talking DFS more publicly now, from my perspective, I'm significantly closer to the end than the beginning. And just doing DFS on a day-to-day basis, there's nothing really material for me to learn by repeating the same things over and over. So, yeah, I'm like a decade in. I think there's opportunity costs when it comes to the time that's going to be involved. Like, there's issues with sort of scaling growth of the market throughout the years. So at this point, I'll be branching out to other fields sooner than later. And I think your platform is a good place to get my story out. And if I happen to give away some alpha or like, you know, create a bunch of other Slim Shadies in the short term, like it's not really going to bother me.
Okay, perfect. We're not going to see Yuda Cow, the DFS personality, though. You're not going to be doing fantasy football videos from your Honda Pilot on Friday night, correct?
No, but I'd probably like hop on more stuff here and there, just casually talk shit.
Okay, so I think I first saw your name around 2014, 2015. What were you doing before DFS?
Right before DFS, I was at a startup for the finance industry, kind of just a regular research job. And I was looking to break into finance, actually. So I found DFS from Basketball Monster, which is kind of an old school NBA, pretty nerdy, like fantasy interface. Their site looked like basically an Excel sheet. I think that was a Justin Fan project.
Justin was there with Matt Buser. Yep.
Yeah. Shout out Justin. But basically, I was just like looking to gain an edge in my like high school, college Yahoo leagues, playing for no money at all, just like for the competition of it. And they were basically the only tools out there for NBA fantasy. So I was on Basketball Monster. They had a deposit bonus for Draft Street. Mm-hmm. So this must have been 2014. So I just like put in the minimum on Draft Street and I was grinding from like the $20 I had on there. It pretty early on, it was like quite profitable. And I was like super being nitty all about it, like hardcore bankroll management. I don't even think GPPs were really that big at that point in time. So there was no way around it. You had basically just like Condia in the lobby at the time for like posting a bunch of head to head. So there was no real like necessary upside to it. So I was just grinding from the low stakes and I never really had to deposit too much after my initial. So that was like a good confidence boost. But I definitely came up slow.
Did you have a background in statistics or programming or math or anything like that? Or did you jump into it more from like a sports dude perspective?
Yeah, definitely from a sports dude perspective, but I was also playing fantasy for no money since I was a child. So all this type of thinking was already intuitive in terms of like trying to model and predict sports. it was really the only learned thing out of the whole process of playing DFS was kind of from a game theory side, and, you know, trying to guess what the market's going to do.
Mm-hmm. What you sounds like you started out playing basketball. I believe you play like a ton of sports now. What sports were you playing at your peak, and what sports are you playing now?
I would say now is the peak in terms of volume, because I can't possibly get more down. So I started NBA. I've always been playing NBA since I came in. Naturally, NFL, you can't really avoid either. And I was playing NFL anyway. And for me, MLB was more of a learned sport, but I got there just really studying it over time.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get into studying in the process here in a second, but we did get a question from Andrew Wiggins, Makasupu, who I know you've battled against plenty. He said, what do you consider your best sport and why?
My best sport is either MLB or NFL. In MLB, I think I just have somewhat better projections. And if you actually look across the industry when it comes to MLB projections, there's no real agreement, which is actually super rare among sites that do offer projections within, say, NBA or NFL. You never have a player projected for something greater than even 10% mm-hmm. of their whatever their projection is, versus where in MLB, there could be such a wide range. And that alone, I think, is a sign that the systems aren't very good. And there's just people heavily leaning on like run totals, stuff like lefty righty split, some elementary things that basically when everyone knows, it's almost detrimental to play into those types of things. So from MLB, I think I have a good projection edge. In NFL, there's the volume is just so wild that you have like the casual action, so it's just softer opponents in general. And I think it provides more opportunities from a correlation and game theory side.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have a team working for you? Like I'm overwhelmed trying to keep up with just NFL news and like what I want to do for an NFL Sunday alone. I'm overwhelmed just playing cash and GPP in a single week instead of just focusing on one. I can't imagine playing the volume you're playing, which for those of you guys who don't know is effectively every game on the site, I assume on both sites. How do you maintain all that? Do you have a team working for you? What's going on behind the scenes there?
I have had help in the past, but it was basically just for side projects here and there. So throughout the most of it, none. And it's been detrimental even at times. Like I've missed a lot more like locks and lineup locks and situations that should have been pretty easy to figure just from not having a team. But no, I've always just been working on my own.
If you want to share, how much can you get in play like on a typical NFL Sunday? I know the action is absolutely insane. I assume you're playing all the sites. How much can you get in play on an NFL Sunday?
Minimum on a Sunday would be 500K. And on a really degenerate day, we get into seven figures. Most of that's at the top end. It's going to be driven usually by whether or not there's just people willing to go harder in the cash streets. Cause mm-hmm. like the GPPs are just going to be what they are. It's like a ton of money. Like regardless, it'll be 200-300K on an NFL Sunday, right? Just from the guaranteed contests. So, at the top end, it's just going to be if there's three or more other whales looking to battle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like sometimes the three mans go off and sometimes they don't, I guess what you're saying. Yeah. And a lot of head to head action as well, for sure.
I guess you'd feel that more in the off seasons where the action isn't necessarily there. So the difference between a day where I'm playing for relative peanuts to like a 300-400K on the line is just the presence of other accounts.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think a realistic ROI is for a very good pro DFS player these days? And I know that's changed over the years. I'm curious how you think it's changed. What was a good ROI during the heyday, during the boom in 2014, 2015, 2016, and And what do you think a good ROI is now, or realistic ROI is now for a very good pro?
At this point, for even the best, anything over 5% is quite strong, I'd say, especially for getting down volume. Mm-hmm. Of course, like that comes with enough standard deviation in your 5% that you're almost certain to lose in some calendar years. So best pros, 5%. If you can consistently touch 10, that's basically amazing. But again, this is also really, there's also factors of diminishing returns for sure. If you were playing lower stakes, even now, if I were to play low stakes, I could probably see 50%. Mm-hmm. So essentially it would mirror what it was like in the beginning, where the ROIs would be like, I never really like ran the numbers for myself. But I'm sure it was at least 30, 50 in the first years, down to like 10% now.
Yeah, I think the volume concept is one that like some people struggle with. In other words, yeah, I could have a 50% ROI, but if I'm only getting $100 down, well, I'm not making that much money. Whereas a 5% ROI on $1 million in play is obviously way, way, way better. Okay, let's talk about process here for a second. And let's just stick to NFL process for now, because I think that's the thing that most people can identify with. Are you doing your own projections, or are you outsourcing your projection to something like ETR? Shout out to us. But how are your projections generated, I guess, is the question. Assuming you're using them, which I shouldn't assume. Yeah.
Well, we should actually assume that a lot of people do use the ETR projections, because anytime you see a optimal lineup from ETR, it will be trained in some form, either in high stakes cash or just the double ups in general. My projections have always just been from me, but I will say in NFL, it mirrors ETR a lot, because I don't think I'm really necessarily seeing anything that you guys aren't, especially when it comes to NFL, a sport that's so studied. You have all week to prepare. It's just very difficult to think in a way that's outside the box in terms of guessing how many points NFL players are going to score. So I do see a benefit from doing my own projections in the other sports. Like I mentioned with MLB, when the industry projections are already so off the walls anyway, there is an edge to having, I guess, my own knowledge when it comes to that. NBA too, I think, is pretty solved. So I don't think there's a huge projection edge to be gained in NBA. Also, the reason I think it's like the weaker of my sports, just because things converge into something efficient with these games over time. And when it's something like NBA or NFL, your industry models are already pretty close to being good.
Do you think that someone can be a winner without using projections? In other words, like they're just, some sports savant and they can go on and just eyeball it and make some teams that are winning, or should everybody be using some form of projections, do you think?
I don't think a typical player can win without projections. If anything, it's just for the sake of a standardized process and consistency. So if you're not using projections and you're just going with like how you feel at a given moment, you could be like a sports whiz, but you'd still miss things on the margins. So just in terms of organization, in order to win consistently, you probably need projections and you probably need an optimizer. Nowadays, you probably even need rules within the optimizer in addition to projections.
Does your projection system include sims? Have you built your own sims? And what do you think about this whole wave of simulation that seems to be kind of bubbling to the forefront?
My system doesn't, and I actually think it could be viewed as even a hole in the game, in my game. But I'm actively considering the range of outcomes anyway, which is essentially what the sims are trying to get at. Your average player really underestimates the outlier outcomes, especially on the negative tail end, meaning when chalk hits, like Matt Collins has like 30 points and he's chalk, everybody's super happy on it and they like feel smart about it. But for every one of those situations, you still have like you have like a 70% Eno Benjamin against the Seahawks getting like 6 points, mm-hmm. stuff like that. They severely underestimate the Eno Benjamin of it, especially when it comes to GPPs. So having models in Sims, I guess, tell you that every week that when you run it, I assume that these types of things can happen at both tail ends mm-hmm. is something that most people should be more cognizant of. Because people just think very, very optimistically when it comes to Sunday at 1 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're working on this behind the scenes to have Sims, our own Sims ready for this season. Can't make any promises yet, but I'm hopeful because we want them to be really, really good. My thing is like, if people understood that 25% of the time, you know, Benjamin is just going to fall flat on his face, you know, and to your point, like the negative tail stuff, I think that would be really, really useful and maybe change the game in GPP a little bit there. So if you're doing all this yourself and you're making all your own projections, I mean, that sounds like an unbelievably time consuming endeavor, especially if you're playing multiple sports, especially during overlap season. I mean, we got a question from P-Lags. He says, does he put in more or less than 80 hours per week? Maybe you can walk us through what like a typical week is like for you during an NFL week with all the other sports going on.
I'm significantly less than 80%. But if you were to factor in time following the sports, consuming media, and just like waking up and thinking about it, you could argue it's sort of a full-time job. But as far as actual physical hours for NFL, I won't even touch anything until Friday morning. I won't even start projecting until Saturday, and I spend my whole Saturday doing NFL. Sometimes it'll be all-nighter or something like that. And then Sunday I'll be up at like 6 a.m. just building, because that's just how long it takes to try to pump out 150 lineups.
Vito asked, any recent process changes you've made compared to years past? In other words, the games have certainly changed a lot. I'm always trying to improve my process. I'm sure everybody else is too. How would you say your process has changed over the years?
I've changed a lot, actually. I think it is part of the reason I could be able to have consistently good results over time. But I used to be more willing to just play the right plays. Like, I would rather be right than win the game. Mm-hmm. So sticking to not really taking any stands when it comes to things that are chalky, playing more into the mean and median stuff, not really factoring in the variance of the event-driven game. So I'm more talking specific to NFL, mm-hmm. but I definitely adjusted my correlation and game theory, leveraging different spots over time when it comes to NFL. And I think last season and the season before even was really when the results were coming as a result, because of the changes.
If you had to, one more thing on process. Are you consuming any content? Like, are you watching any shows? Are you reading any articles? And if so, how do you incorporate that into your process?
Yeah, I watch a good amount of the ETR stuff. So I think you and Silva and Wiggins, I watch that show most weeks. ETR, you really, if you're just going to play NFL and you had 5 hours, is a pretty good resource just to get on top of everything. Outside of that, I listen to Ian Harditz, most of his stuff in review. In NBA, I'll watch your NBA injury show. But not too much like compiling stuff. I'll do Dunk Down in NBA as well. Nothing really for MLB.
Yeah. And so when you watch shows like that, are you like trying to use it to actively adjust your projections, or I assume you're doing your own ownership projections, or are you outsourcing your ownership projections? How are you using that, the shows and stuff like that?
When I watch the shows, it's mostly to hear noise and review sort of what's happening, let it soak in before I even start projecting. So it's more of a review and get the slate on your mind mm-hmm. activity for me.
You're playing cash and tournaments, which, you know, I've said in the past that I think if I just focus on one, I'm better at one, for me personally, it's hard for me to stop playing cash because like people want to play the sex joke guy, Adam. And so I get all this kinds of crazy action. I kind of at this point prefer to just focus on tournaments, but I just can't pass it up. It sounds like you have a choice though. However, you want to get so much money down. I assume that's why you play both. Do you think it's detrimental to play both? And how much of your time is focused on cash versus GPP?
There is some takeaway in terms of being able to manage both. So from trying to run both at the same time when you have to run late swaps situation, it does put me at a disadvantage. I just end up prioritizing whatever contests are worth more in terms of having to have both cash, a bunch of lineups elsewhere. But I think the two processes do go hand in hand. In order to be able to properly go against the grain in GPPs on certain plays, you actually have to know why those plays are good to begin with. So cash, you're evaluating everything from every angle. You're understanding what makes it a high upside situation, why it's a high floor. You have sort of the nuances of how it could be fragile, how it could fail, versus situations where it does well. You just have a much better understanding, and combined with how you would think about the rest of your lineup, it's pretty important in the context of a GPP, which really does take much more thought to it. But I think playing cash gives me a higher basis of understanding the projections of basically everyone.
Totally agree. Yeah. And I've said that a bunch, that like to understand why a play is a fade in GPP, like I can feel it in my bones when like I play a guy in cash and I'm like, God, this is really thin and he's going to be 30% in tournaments. It's obvious that that's going to be a really bad play. For sure. So, I've seen some very high stakes, well-known pros basically just run like what looks to me like the optimal, or like they just run the ETR optimal or whatever projections they're using. They just like click optimal and run. And that's why it's easy, I think, for them to play cash and GPP. I'm not sure in today's high stakes cash, you're winning like that. Would you ever consider just like taking your projections, hitting optimize and taking the top lineup and playing that in cash?
Definitely not, but that was sort of the shift that I mentioned in my own strategy like 3 or 4 years ago, where I think I'd be more willing to do that in the past. But now, because everybody knows actually what the right answer is in terms of what the optimal, and there's not much disagreement, you could, in theory, just shift one or two things about that optimal and probably run something competitive and high stakes, like smaller field. But if you are to like win a field of 1,000 or like however many the Millie Makers are, it would just be nearly impossible to do. Too many things would have to go right in your favor.
Sure.
In terms of plays hitting. It's just very, very hard proposition to win with a cash lineup.
Yeah. I meant just for playing cash though, like, hey, just hit run and this is what I'm going to play in all my head to heads and 50-50s and not playing in tournaments.
Yeah.
From Veteran Best Ball sent in a question. If you'd had to start over today with $1,000 bankroll, what sports game stakes would he play? So let's say somebody wants to start off, they want to be the next Yuta, they have $1,000. How should they get into it?
Yeah, I think I would just join the lowest stakes possible, not even bother with anything sexy like the $20 Millie Maker even. I think you just play things that are, you could do like the beginner cash games or just smaller, like these, there's a lot of like non-guaranteed prize pools you could play for $2, $5, where you'd be playing pretty soft competition. If you really wanted to grind your way, you could probably do well with those.
Yep. Yeah. And I post the article every year and it's still up on the site, like the games that I would play if I was trying to play 500 in a week or 100 in a week or something like that. There's so many games out there that like below $5 obviously should be all your games if you were starting. And then some of the games like you just talking about, like the non-guaranteed ones, are going to attract less people if they're going to fail. Those are likely really, really good spots. And sometimes the secondary post ones, like they'll post a game or a tournament, and then the second one, after that one fails, they'll post another one and not as many strong players in that one. So yeah, there's so much that we could talk about with game selection for another time. I got to ask about your physical setup, man. These guys at ETR, everybody kills me. Oh, Levitan's a boomer. They kill me because I have two computers and I have two mice, right? So like everything is completely separate. Nothing goes across screens. The people want to know, what does your setup look like?
Well, I'm actually in my living room right now, so it's not my normal setup, but my setup is like dingy guest room in my house, like back of the house. I got two laptops and two separate mouses, because I know that's a thing within the ETR streets about something about like having was it you basically getting flamed for having two mouses, yes, instead of one mouse that reaches between both monitors?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you have more control when you have the two mouses. You're not going to randomly be on the wrong screen. Yeah.
You're speaking my language now. Yeah. And like, yeah, it's amazing to me that, I don't know, I'm just shocked, I guess, that you don't have like a more deep like team helping you. It's like incredible that you're able to play all these sports at these stakes. And also most importantly, two computers, two mice. Do you watch the games? Can we learn anything by actually physically watching the games? And maybe NBA and NFL, I guess I'm most interested in, do you watch the games? And if so, what do you try to watch for, if anything, when you watch the games?
Absolutely. I watch the games. It's just, if I have a bunch of money on it, I'll be engaged with it either way. I hear a lot of DFS players, like, they basically never watch the games, and they like, it's mostly the ones coming from the board game chess side, where it's sort of just an equation and the numbers change and you either win or lose. But I think it is possible if you want to play that way, but I think picking up subtle stuff from the game is really good for your future decision-making, especially if sometimes you have to make a decision on the fly, and just the knowledge that you already have would make something easy versus like having to wait for an algorithm to run based on some changes. So I think it can't possibly hurt if picks are always a function of like math and game theory, and then your gut, it's watching the games is basically working out like your gut health, and only good can come out of it.
Yeah. I like watching the games. I try to be really conscious about not letting what I see trick me. In other words, you know, some guy makes some insane, you know, he goes 8 for 9 from 3-point range last night, and all of a sudden everybody wants to play him the next day. Like, that's obviously an extreme example that I think doesn't happen that much in DFS anymore. But I think there's something to watching the games for sure. I'm always wondering if it's worth the time commitment, right? Should I go back and watch every single NFL game from the previous week? That's a ton of time. Is it worth it to do so? I try to track all the games by word. In other words, like, I'll go to ESPN.com and I'll watch like, you know, Jamison Crowder just caught a 9-yard pass out of the slot. And like, I'm able to digest all the games at once through the words, but I don't know. It's just such a big time commitment to go back and rewatch every single game. I'm just not sure that the ROI is worth it on going back and watching, but yeah.
There probably is merit to doing it in the NFL. But since it's so studied anyway, I could go on YouTube and watch someone's highlights, or even watch like all of a quarterback's throws in a week in over the course of like 3 minutes or something like that. So because the sport itself is so studied, there's no real need. And with all the reporting, you can sort of tell whether a game was won in a certain way that might've been fluky, or if like a player's outcomes aren't really an indicator of how good or bad they are.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of like really elite players who seemed like they were on top of the world and were winning and were just crushing all the games. We've seen them come and go. You seem to have sustained it. We got a question from Yolkix. He said, Yuta is my favorite DFS player and number one person I model my game after for a long time now. Over the years, the former best players have scaled way back or stopped playing. What does Yuta think has made his play sustainable?
Mostly the ability to evolve over time. And I think generally it was mostly due to the nature of the games changing themselves, where the industry took off, they're growing, and so it was easy money. And then at a certain point, you have touts and you have projections sprouting up, people making much more content for it. It made it so that the research part was sort of done for the user in a way that frankly is quite good. So from there, you really had to dive into the next level when it came to GPPs in terms of how to navigate things when sort of how I mentioned with like the outlier outcomes, sort of thinking about that when, because like nowadays the prize pools will be like very top heavy. You'll have like a million to first and like 200K to second. So you actually have to maximize your outcomes of like getting that super outlier result much more than you had to do in the past, where because in aggregate the projections weren't as good, you could just play better projections and just over time you'll see success. But it's really, in my eyes, not how it is anymore.
Yeah. It's amazing to me that like you haven't gotten burned out during this time. I mean, I can get burned out just following football. You're playing MLB, NBA. I've seen you in the golf streets lately, obviously, NFL. Do you ever get burnt out, bored, unfulfilled, anything like that kind of during your DFS career?
Yeah, earlier on, I was just so motivated to get better. I would say like my first 3 years that I basically took no days off. Didn't really feel a burnout because you would have a fear of missing out from missing a slate here or there. But I basically viewed it as I might as well maximize whatever time I'm spending on it by just constantly doing DFS every hour of the day. So basically, I only started taking more sustained breaks after I reached a certain level of success. And I realized it was probably pretty mentally unhealthy for me to go that hard when I did, but I'm not going to complain about the results, but looking back at it, I think I'd be better off just taking my foot off the gas for periods of time. I do like take plenty of slates off at this point.
Mm. Not NFL slates. You're talking about random basketball slates, yeah, and stuff like, yeah, that. Yeah.
Random like weeks in MLB over the summer. It would be impossible basically to skip an NFL Sunday with, right, the action that you could get down relative to the amount of time you need to spend on it.
Right. For sure. You sounded like at the beginning you were thinking about getting out of DFS. Maybe talk a little bit about that. What was your next plan? What would your next move be? What do you think about, you mentioned the end. I hope it's not the end for you, or maybe I do hope it's the end for you. I don't know, but either way, what are you thinking?
I actually don't have anything in mind yet. I think just anything peer-to-peer competitive, probabilistic, if you're right about something, you win money, mm-hmm, type of thing. I've had some notion about doing analytics for front office sports in the professional sense, but I think at this point it would be hard to make the move just because there'd be such a gap in terms of the pay downgrade and just having to really work through like some type of corporate ranks to even get, yeah, to these levels where you get a payout.
I mean, these front offices are hiring like NASA quality or just these insane,
right,
data scientists. It doesn't sound like you have a background like that, or I don't know, maybe I missed that, but
I do. I think I do have more to offer in the way of just knowing sports really well. Like you have like these soft skills when it comes to like just scouting or like knowing how a game is played, that's kind of invaluable just for the front office versus just like someone who's purely a quant. Mm-hmm. So coming from DFS, you still like have some edge to it. It's just now that like, unless I was like the head of analytics for an MLB or NBA team, it wouldn't even really be worth the possibility of like having to stop playing DFS.
Sure. Oh, of course.
So yeah, it would have to be like really a thing of passion, which is why I'm probably going to take my time thinking about it.
Yeah. But I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but you've made, in my assumption, way more than enough money to pursue passion projects for the rest of your life. Right. And like, that's like, to me, a big, big advantage of, you know, if I had all the money in the world, I would start a puppy daycare center. However, you know, not there quite yet, but yeah. Interesting.
Well, absolutely. That's sort of why I I'm going to scale back, and like how I know I'm closer to the end, just because with time being a factor, it really becomes a proposition of, do I want to spend 6 hours of my Friday grinding NBA news mm-hmm. versus doing something where I could have upside further and learn a few things in.
Sure. We've seen DFS kind of get pushed to the back burner by sites, especially FanDuel, but I think DraftKings to some degree as well. What are your thoughts on sports betting? Have you dabbled at all? I believe you're in New York, which recently got mobile legalization. There's certainly some edges to be exploited in sports betting. What are your thoughts on the whole sports betting boom, and are you tempted to get into it at all?
I have dabbled for sure, but I think at a certain point, it's also just a account management game where if they sense you doing well, you're going to get limited. You have to have users know it's not you behind the username in order to just like get money down. So in that sense, it's not ideal. Whereas in DFS, I could still get off plenty and I'm not really running around like getting new usernames and accounts to play. So overall, it can't be bad. Like having people able to gamble on sports is just going to be good for the market. But I think anyone who's been playing DFS or had ever had an interest in playing DFS has already been playing for some time. So I'm not sure what it entails for fantasy sports in general, but just having more interest is not going to be a bad thing. So yeah, I think the legislation has all been favorable.
Yeah. The accounts thing is like the number one point. If you want to play sports betting high stakes and you don't want to run around and get accounts, then like, you know, you're just dead.
I wish it wasn't that way, but it's a tough ecosystem to manage, both from the sportsbook perspective and like trying to grow it versus really allowing everybody to play what they want to play.
For sure. Yeah. My thing, not to get off on a tangent, is just like, you want to give $100, you want to give $200, just say it, just be transparent. Hey, I go to X sportsbook. It says, we'll give you $200 no matter who you are. If you want more than that, then you got it. We got to refer you, but at least tell me what I'm going to get without being referred to behind the scenes. Anyways.
Yeah. Luckily I've been dusted in the sportsbook so far. So I have some ground to make up before I start getting limited.
Clean accounts. Wow. Okay. Is there anything you think the sites should change about DFS? You know, my big pet peeve, and I've gone on a rant on this a million times, is I think there should be no late swap ever, like in any sport, no matter what. Somebody gets scratched, you be a man and you eat it. I think in the long term, it's better for everyone. I know not everyone disagrees there, but that would be my one thing I would change. If I could change one thing about DFS, what's one thing you would change from the site's perspective if you could change something about DFS?
I feel like we don't really have a say in it, because the actions that the sites have taken has always been with a mindset of what the market wants. Mm-hmm. And so over time, we've had Showdown come up. People have that energy to bet on the one game stuff. So they're going to make that contest and prioritize it. We've had sort of a slow trend towards more top heavy prizes because it just sells better. So whatever the site does, I think it's just going to be a function of what people are willing to pay for. I wouldn't mind the sites making some efforts to loop in some of that sweet sports betting pie that's growing, but I don't really know how they would do that. I think it's possible if you were to like offer some type of promotion where if you like were to do well in sports betting, you could like parlay it over to the fantasy side, other than just parlay it on the next single game thing.
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
But I think it's still like they're definitely in their interest to focus on sports betting at this point. And it's just so much of a more simple game that there is no, from their perspective, I don't really see a need to like move resources into DFS. I think FanDuel could invest in some better server resources. But beyond that, the market is what it is. And at least I don't really see it becoming that much sharper over time. I think it's just pretty mature.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, Clearly. And you know, DFS is going to be more work than betting on sports, but I do think that it's more fun and the payoff to me is better. And the whole accounts thing you talked about is better as well. I mentioned late swap. I'm curious on your late swap process. You know, we know that people are under swapping massively. The general public is not swapping enough in tournaments, like period, like not even close. You're managing so many teams, so many slates. What's your late swap process? Do you have anything automated? Have you built anything behind the scenes to try to automate anything on a sophisticated level for late swap?
I have it, but if you're going to automate something, that would be something very good for someone who is sophisticated in programming to try to do sort of some type of model where you can like reverse engineer what your opponents have, what you can swap to. The thing about late swap is that it's like so time sensitive, you're relying on more information coming in, and that without that information, you can't make a necessarily a good, the best decision based on what you have. You probably feel this more in NBA when the games on the East Coast would be ongoing, but not done, but you might have a tough decision on a West Coast game in the same lineup. So I obviously am building with swapping in mind. In my cash contests, I'll like already know what the swap would be before I even the time comes for it. And you even have to sort of guess, basically know your opponent's models over time. It's like essentially guess what they're on. In GPP though, it is underused, especially with the top heavy prizes. I've definitely transitioned to like trying to account for that more. And I think the best someone could do is if they're not in possession of like this late swap model that doesn't exist, would be to build with your swap in mind. And if you have anything that's high leverage going into the swap, prioritize looking at that. And at least you're gonna have something to gain from a swap if you can't get to everything.
Yeah. One thing about swapping is knowing your opponent, right? And like I play a lot of the same guys at higher stakes head to head every week. I assume most of your action is against the same guys for the most part every week. There's not like randoms showing up to play, you know, the 5K 50-50 or whatever it is. What's it like playing against the same people every week? Are you studying their lineups to try to project what they're going to do? I think people are interested in like what the high stakes nosebleed ecosystem is like.
A lot of it is just, it'll be three sharks and we're hoping a fourth shows up and plays some of our games. But you generally at the high level, you already know what they have. They generally know what you have. Some of my edge over time has been to have my projection system be a little different coming from my head rather than outsourcing it. So I might be slightly more unpredictable, and I think that's helped in me being sustainable there. But yeah, a lot of times it's a game of chicken versus in terms of like, if they know you have to swap in order to have a chance against them, they might just make that same swap. Mm-hmm. So it's really monitoring that situation pretty closely. You do definitely have to know with high certainty what they have. But I mean, at that level, I think everybody's doing it consistently. So it's more of something where you actually gain something when people slip up. But these are like percentages in terms of equity.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's get to some of these listener questions here. Thanks to everyone who sent in all the questions. Got some good ones from Big Dog. Has Utacow ever broken any objects while sweating DFS? Do you get passionate, Utacow? Do you ever get angry while you're sweating DFS?
I used to sweat nervously a good amount before, but at this point, I'm much more even keeled. I don't think I've broken anything, but there's been some close calls, some tossed remotes. But yeah, it was, especially like there's a psychological element to it when you're in a downswing, especially that like, if it's like the fifth day in a row of nothing going right, it doesn't hurt to like take something out of something.
Well, that's why you have two mice. So you can break one and it's totally fine.
There you go.
Question two from Donnie Draper. He says, how do you know if it was good process, bad results versus you just suck? So I've asked this question a lot. I've asked this question myself. I've asked it of a ton of people that have come on the show, it's easy to just say, oh, I got unlucky and that's why I lost. How do you know if you're running bad, if variance isn't on your side, or you're actually playing bad?
It's generally just good to think about this probabilistically before even trying to assess. But overall, if you're running hot in terms of potential sweats that you're having and you're just not banking them at the end, generally, you're probably going to have those results come your way eventually. If you're going through a stretch where you're just like never really live to win anything, I would probably start looking into your game more, seeing if there's anything actionable to change. Generally, when I've run poorly, I'll start feeling it more, becoming more emotional, and I'll like look back at certain outcomes that happened and start diagnosing how much I truly ran bad when I lost that. Like when a football hits off a DB's helmet and Antonio Brown catches it and has like a 70-yard touchdown, and then I lost like 800K off it, I know that like this outcome isn't necessarily the norm, and like I can sort of assess how much of it I really should have lost. And when those start adding up and it's coinciding like with your downswing, you're probably just having bad luck. At the same time, like I feel it the other way, where if I'm having an extreme heater and then I like win a Millie Maker near the end of it, I would just laugh to myself knowing like I don't deserve this. So you have to just be really even keeled in terms of when you win, did you win because you were lucky? When you lost, did you lose because you were unlucky?
Right.
It's sort of a sense that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, obviously it's going to balance out, right? And like if your ROI is 5 or 10%, you're going to have some insane days and you're going to have some horrible weeks or months or whatever. It's just, it's all going to balance out. Sometimes though, like when I'm playing, it's harder for cash. Like for tournaments, I agree with you. If you go to the bankroll tracker on the solver, you can see what percent of your large field GBP lineups finish in the top 1%, right? So if you have like 1.8 or 1.9% of your teams finishing in the top 1%, that's really, really good. And you're probably going to bink something relatively soon if you keep playing like that. With cash, it's harder. Like, you know, sometimes I'll lose like 2-3 weeks in a row. I'm like, God, it's hard for me to tell if I'm playing bad. I typically for NFL just try to look at the usage and if it was as I expected. And so, yeah, it's definitely a hard thing.
So in the past calendar year, I've won a bunch of Millie Makers, yeah. But in the previous calendar year, I was second in like 5 of them. So whether or not you end up winning those is essentially the difference between a mediocre and great year sometimes. Right. And all it takes is one or two over the course of 365.
I'm curious if you look at anybody else's play, you know, you could download the CSV from DraftKings and see what, you know, Ricky D is doing or Two Gun, or I don't know whoever you think the best tournament players are. Do you ever review the results of other players or the teams that what other people are playing?
Yeah, I study my opponents a good amount just to see if there's anything with the curve that I could stay ahead of. You actually end up knowing how they play pretty well. So I think Ricky D is actually a pretty good example of a person whose lineups I'd look at. He's really good at game theory side of stuff. So I think every high stakes pro does have a relative strength, and those would be the things I hone on now.
Question 3 from James. He says, how important do you think is sport familiarity? I get crushed when it's not NFL or MLB. In theory, it shouldn't matter if you have good ownership and player point projection. So I guess James' question is, how important is domain knowledge of the sport for being good at DFS?
I don't think it's super necessary, but it's definitely good on the margins. And if you're not really model reliant, you can make a lot of good decisions just based on your knowledge of the sport. So it's more of a skill that would be applied to, I guess, GPPs, where you use your own instincts in a certain way. If there's any type of alarm in your head for a certain play not being good, could be chalky, it's always good to have your own insights.
Question 4 from Biff. He says, any thoughts on the best ball boom? Do you play best ball? any strategies, et cetera, et cetera.
I've never done it because I've heard you kind of have to constantly be on the screen. And so you might be more familiar with it than I am, but I've never really tested it out just because I think I'd rather enjoy my summers.
Yeah, it is really fun, man. I mean, and obviously Underdog is the sponsor of this podcast, but even if they weren't, it is so fun to just get on there on your phone and like fire off some drafts. They take like 20 minutes. I agree with you that it's annoying. I was with Peter CSU and we were in Yosemite, like one of the most beautiful places in the world. And he's sitting there grinding Underdog best ball drafts on his phone. I was ready to murder him. However, if you have some control over it, I do think it's so fun. And I do think there's a pretty big edge.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. I think for me, there's also like a learning curve at this point. And so it'd be tough to spend that first year trying to get it down and then basically start profiting from there, I assume.
Yeah. I would also say that it is playing best ball throughout the summer, like helps me in DFS. In other words, like sure. I am very well aware of what the market thinks of players before week one even gets there. And I have a better understanding of what I think of players relative to market. You know what I mean? So I do think it helps a little bit there.
I think it's definitely helpful for your job, but I'm not like a true NFL guy. So I kind of just show up on the Friday before the games. I'll like find out who's playing that week, like go to watch your show or like read Silva's stuff and like get a good sense. And then I'll just be consumed by it the next day or two. And then take the next few mentally off it must be so much more encompassing as someone who does content.
Yeah, for sure. Do you play any season long? Like there's some, you can not high stakes, but you can get 5Ks and 10Ks off in some of these season long leagues pretty easily if you're interested in season long.
Yeah. Once I started DFS, all the season long stuff ended for me.
Yeah.
It's very tough. And at this point I definitely need some money down to even have a feel for it, sure. Even as a sports fan.
Yes. You've been broken like the rest of us. From Chase, he says, you're a regular DFS player, not a pro. You have 30 minutes before a slate. What does your process look like? Somebody shows up 30 minutes before a slate, let's say NFL, what would you say they could do to give themselves a chance?
If it was 30 minutes before an NFL slate, I would call my rep and tell him to cancel. Because it would, unless you just want to fire something to like feel some action in the game, sure. But I think for most other sports, it would just be correlating as much as possible because your sense of the game and projection isn't going to be strong.
Yeah.
If you have an idea of what the chalk is and stuff like that, you should be more willing to play against it, but it's only because you're relatively ignorant on the numbers.
Yeah. No, if you had 30 minutes, I would just go to our projection page, look at our projections versus our ownership projections, find a stack that you like, and then like figure out leverage from there. If you would make one team and put it in single entry, I think 30 minutes you could do it and have like a slightly plus EV team or legit plus EV team in some single entry NFL contest for sure.
For a single entry, I could definitely do it. If it was anything more, it would just be too much of a scramble to try to get things right.
Second to last question here comes from Chris. He says, what are Utica's feelings about the DFS ecosystem moving forward? I actually want to separate this into two parts. There's the high stakes ecosystem, which, you know, most 99% of people aren't involved in. Then there's the ecosystem in DFS for the 99% everybody else playing lotto, playing low stakes cash, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I'm curious what you think about the ecosystem going forward for both of those groups, for the nosebleeds, the top 1% of players, and then also everyone else.
In the high stakes, it's kind of going to always be like this, where you're essentially waiting on like what other non-reg is going to be around once in a while. But it's sort of just like that, even in poker, where you'll have like some businessman in finance playing poker, and then all the poker regs grinding models come in and like try to play them. So that's essentially just the state of it there. I don't think really see it changing. for everything else, it's definitely just a trend towards top heavy stuff. And I think the sites know this, given how popular like parlays are relative to just betting the spreads. When anyone with really a hope of trying to like do anything sustainable should just be like never parlaying, just doesn't really make sense. But I think that's the majority of where the action is now. So it's going to be reflected in the sites. So you just have to really have more of a grasp on the game theories to do well in the ecosystem. But I wouldn't say it's going to grow or shrink. I think the market is pretty solid as a mature system.
Yeah. Something that I've tried to think about as the ecosystem has kind of changed is like, how can I change my lineups based on field size? And how can I change my lineups based on what percent goes to first, you know? And like some of this stuff, especially on FanDuel, is so top heavy. My lineups should be more built for that. And I think the better people can adjust to stuff that is
I definitely am modeling lineups specifically towards that type of thought. For example, my lineup in a head-to-head wouldn't even be the same as a lineup in like an eight-man, where it's like two people might win out of eight. You would just have to take statistically one thing and change it. Otherwise, you're really just flipping and trading rake.
You just said like you're modeling. When you say modeling, do you mean just like different settings in the optimizer, or do you mean like actually your own models that you have for different field sizes and stuff like that?
I don't have a different model for different field sizes, but I think you can adjust it probably with something like product correlation, where the larger your field, the lower ownership you want to run. Mm-hmm. So I do all my ownership projections too. And I think it's pretty integral to being able to do well in GPPs. But yeah, I do change inputs and outputs for things that are more top heavy and things that are bigger.
All right. Last question we have here is from CSC Ram, Peter Jennings himself, one of the best friends of the show. Of course, he says, outside of himself, who does he think is the best DFS player of all time?
Okay, this is pretty tough.
You could separate it by sport if you want.
I think that's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
But broadly, it's kind of like trying to debate who's the GOAT NBA player or like who's the best current NBA player. It's like the thing that I will say that's common among the best players is that they don't really have weaknesses, but even then they still have relative strengths, sort of how it would be in like golf or NBA. So you really have to think of it even in the context of sport and also even by like payout structure. So I think NFL, we already mentioned Ricky D, really solid with just the game theory aspect, and like he's sick at showdown. Mm-hmm. In NBA, I think highly of Kobe for MVP and Chet Abisk. Mm-hmm. In terms of like their projecting with like the range of outcomes, it's like everybody's really just good at a different part. So like petty theft in NBA is really strong in his projections as a function of matchup, but he's not really good in the same ways as the other guys I've mentioned. MLB, it's hard to say. I think I'd go with Loves Bases, who's based kind of like a plays like with petty theft style, but applied to MLB, but he doesn't really play the GPPs. So it's just there's a bunch of strong players and they happen to be good at different parts. Like Chipotle and Gates, they're really good at like correlation and news related stuff. So if I were to pick one, I couldn't really tell you about.
Yeah. You've kind of stayed out of some of these, or as far as I know, you stayed out of some of these battles that have taken down other people, like head to head battles. I know like Sahil, Max Dallery, like got into some head to head stuff. Condia was like playing crazy stakes, head to head, taking on all comers. It seems like you post, but you're not like actively seeking battles in head to head. Is that how it goes out there?
I actually haven't posted head to heads in a while, just because when I did post, I never really got the games filled. And it was when I play DFS, it's always really down to the buzzer. I'm never not making a change at 6:59. So I think it was just too much to manage. That was actually too much to manage for one person at the same time. So I've just been doing three mans indefinitely, and I like my strategies there.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Is there anyone you don't like to see in your three mans? I know you've battled with Wiggins, Makasupa a bunch. I know you've battled with, I don't know, it seems like the three-man ecosystem is crazy with McLovin. And yeah, I don't even fully know what's going on in the three-man ecosystem, but yeah.
I don't mind playing two regs in the three-man just because my projections are slightly different. And when you're working with the best data and info anyway, things are going to converge onto similar outcomes, similar lineups. So the way I view it is I'm a little more likely to have a 2v2 that's different than one that's going to be duped among potentially two other users.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Three-man ecosystem is really, really interesting. And the theory around it is interesting. The AMA you did in the ETR Discord was awesome. Everybody really, really appreciated it. So yeah, I think people would love to hear from you as much as you're willing to share. So maybe just give the people your Twitter just in case you ever decide to start tweeting.
Yeah, my Twitter is my username, YodaCow. And yeah, DMs are open for me. If you are a MLB person with some experience, because I'm looking to automate my MLB model.
Okay. Job offering from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I realized that MLB is a sport where you could sort of just use a model, like use it same day. You have your inputs. It's not going to change too much, but I still end up spending way too much time grinding over the summers for it. So.
And by the way, people probably think on here, I'm just calling Yuta by his screen name. YutaCow is his actual name and his screen name. So I'm not just sitting here calling by his screen name the whole time. This is Yuta's actual name. So yeah. All right. Well, appreciate the time so much. I'm sure you'll get a bunch of people following you and DMing you for for this job. But yeah, this was awesome. Learned so much and appreciate the time for sure. For Yuta. For producer Luke, I'm Adam. Good luck, everybody.